This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Yesterday, the nominees for the 2005 Grammy Awards were announced. There are two categories for world music, traditional and contemporary. Here's a sample of the nominees.
Entre a boca a vaca é disparado, vês que a vaca pobre não de velocidade. Olha que matou de coisa forte, um dia até chegar na frente.
That was the Masters of Persian Music from the album Without You. Cesaria Evora from Voz d'Amour, the monks of Shirabling Monastery from their album Sacred Tibetan Chant, and Bill Frisell from his CD The Intercontinentals, all Grammy nominees. Well, these days, the category of world music is very inclusive, very wide-ranging, and for somebody new to it, maybe a bit overwhelming. So what is world music exactly, and how can an interested listener navigate among all those different styles and artists? The NPR Curious Listener's Guide to World Music might be a start. Music critic and author Chris Nixon will join us. Later in the program, a new biography of the great gypsy guitarist Django Reinhardt. But first, world music. If you're a fan, how do you define it? What drew you to it? And where do you find it? Give us a phone call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is NPR commentator Chris Nixon at the studios of member station KUOW in Seattle. And welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you very much, Neil. So it's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. What is it that ties all those different things together as world music?
Perhaps the only unifying thread is that they're from other parts of the world than where we live. And if you think about it, too, the reverse applies. American music, such as Cajun Zydeco and some roots country music, to people in foreign parts, is world music. It all depends on your perspective.
In your book, you contrast world music with the commercial fare that's available to most people most of the time. One of the things you really talk about a lot is authenticity. What do you mean by that?
Well, world music it's a grab bag term. It's a catch-all term. But I think to apply it properly, it's music that has a root in tradition. It may not be traditional music, but its roots come out of whatever tradition it's coming from, be it something out of India, Africa, Europe, wherever. It emerges out of a folk tradition, however much it's changed from that. It's not pop music. It's not jazz. It's something that has a root in the country. The magazine F-Roots in England defines it as local music from out there, which is perhaps as good a term as you're going to find anywhere.
Jazz certainly derived from folk music originally.
It's become a category unto itself, though. I don't think you could say that, the pianist Bill Evans, for example, played world music. You can hear it to an extent in some of the stuff Stan Getz did in the 60s, perhaps, or maybe a little bit in Miles Davis's Sketches of Spain, or you can hear the Indian influence in John Coltrane's A Love Supreme, but it's not the real root of the music. Jazz has evolved into its own particular art form that may incorporate bits of world music, but at the heart remains jazz.
There are an awful lot of changes taking place in world music, and as we mentioned at the top of the show, maybe 20, 25 years ago, there were a few nonsuch records tucked away in the back bin of a record store. It's really taken off.
Oh, it has. It's in the last, let's say, 15 years, it's become a recognized category. It's still very marginalized. in terms of sales compared to what you're going to find for a lot of more mainstream categories. But it's acknowledged as been there, and its influence has grown. You hear a lot of dance and electronic records that sample from world music. And that only helps raise the profile of world music and makes people more aware of its existence.
And unlike many other sectors of the music industry, world music seems to be doing pretty well.
It does. It's one where there is a continual growth because there's so much to discover out there, and I think people are becoming bored with what's generally on offer in terms of, you know, rock and pop, and are searching for something with more depth, and that's what they find in world music.
If you'd like to join our conversation, by the way, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest is Chris Nixon, author of the NPR Curious Listener's Guide to World Music, and let's take a call. Bronwyn joins us now from Minneapolis. Hi.
This is a great conversation. I was introduced really to world music through a couple of sources. I've always liked Celtic music. That's my family's heritage. And then a friend of mine introduced me to a group called Afro-Celt Sound System, which basically combines the tradition of African rhythms and musics and then combines it with Celtic music, which makes a great combination. So I was surprised. My question or comment, I guess, basically is, now when you mentioned that there's going to be a category in the Grammys for world music, I'm surprised. I guess, I don't know, how do you quantify or classify, you know, the greatness of music that is worldly, that's just basically based on thousands of years of tradition where, you know, maybe pop or modern music isn't so much part of the heritage as just far as just the entertainment value?
Chris?
Well, there are actually two world music categories in the Grammys. There's traditional and contemporary. And with the nominees announced, it was interesting that in the traditional category, there are a lot of small label releases, a couple on Smithsonian Folkways, and I forget what the others were. But for the contemporary, it was all big label stuff. And to my mind, not necessarily the best music put out this year by any means.
So the contemporary category is a little like the Oscars' best foreign film?
In a way, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the traditional, my take on it is that NARAS is just a sort of a throwaway category. They don't care, but the contemporary is seen as higher profile. So you get the bigger labels pushing things. There's Youssou N'Dour's album, Angélique Kidjo's, the new Gypsy Kings, and the new Bebel Gilberto. And for my personal taste, out of those, and I stress my own personal taste, the only one that really should have been nominated was Youssou N'Dour's album, which is wonderful. And I'd have liked to have seen stuff from some smaller labels in there. And I feel if it had really been chosen on the quality, that might have happened, but you're talking a lot of politics involved there, I think.
Well, let's get back to Afro-Celt. I mean, is this this combination of styles, is that world music too?
Yes, it is. I mean, if you take the root of world music as being a local folk music, then folk music inevitably develops with each generation and changes and evolves. And what Afro-Celts are doing is essentially an evolution of folk music's mixing and matching. At the start of the 90s, there was a band called Mouth Music, which mixed a particular type of Celtic music with African rhythms and electronic beats and loops. And Afro-Celts has done that in a far more successful way. They make music that works equally well on the dance floor as to listen to. So it is an evolution of folk music in its own way. And yes, it is world music.
Mm-hmm. Bronwyn, thanks for the call.
Thanks a lot.
Here's an email we have from Sarah Ansari. Why do I like world music, she writes? Because my father is Azerbaijani and my mother's from Michigan. I grew up listening to Azerbaijani folk songs, Nat King Cole and Joan Baez. My father is Muslim. My mother is Seventh-day Adventist. I went to the mosque with my father, listened to the mournful prayer calls. I went to church with my mother and sang, "We gather together to ask the Lord's blessing," etc. I like world music because it hovers above borders, above categories. contemporization. With my background, anything less would bore me.
Which I think is a great comment. It's it does transcend border and culture, and it gives you an eye and into the way other people live and think, and the way the world is becoming more segmented these days. That can only be a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another phone call. This is Mosh Staba. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, from Tucson, Arizona.
Thank you very much for taking my call. It's Mosh Staba. Mm-hmm. And I suppose I'm a poet, so I'm interested in world music. I'm originally from Iran, and right now this planet needs world music. The world needs world music, especially the American people with their historical island mentality. They need world music. They need to know that there is a world out there and that there is diversity of culture and language that is in danger of hubris of power. So world music reminds people, especially people who are, because of the disservice of the so-called Western free media, are brainwashed. It reminds them that there is a world out there, there is incredible richness in the world, and that now that the American people who practice power in the name of the American people are on a rampage to destroy a lot of things in the world that are worthy, the American people need to hear world music to say, no, let's don't do to the planet what other tyrants in history have done. And it's like, it's so badly needed for people to hear notes, to hear expression of people's hearts around the planet so that life doesn't die.
Mosh Staba, thank you very much for that phone call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's listen to some music. We've asked Chris to pick some favorites. Tell us a little bit about Boban Markovic.
This is some wonderful Balkan music, Balkan brass band music. There's a strong culture of that throughout the Balkan countries, and there's a great festival there every year where so many brass bands compete. It's wonderful mad stuff, just played at about 200 miles an hour in bizarre, complex times. And actually, the CD this is from introduces Boban's son, Marco, who's 15, who also plays the trumpet like him, carrying it on into a new generation, which is, I guess, continuing what I was saying about the evolution of folk music, because what Marco will do in 15 years' time will probably be slightly different from this. But it's just wonderful, enriching music, raises the hair on the back of your neck just trying to keep up with it.
Well, listen to a snatch of it. This is from the Boban Markovic Orchestra, from the album Boban I Marko. The Boban Markovic Orchestra. We'll have more music and more of your calls and emails after we get back from a break. We're speaking with Chris Nixon, the author of the NPR Curious Listener's Guide to World Music, also a music critic and a regular contributor to NPR. If you'd like to join us, the number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email, totn@npr.org. We'll be back after a short break. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about world music today. Our guest is Chris Nixon, the author of a new book, The NPR Curious Listener's Guide to World Music. And many artists from other countries have come to tour the United States as interest in world music has grown. Chilean folk musician Maria Montalvo just completed her first U.S. tour, during which she sang songs from her most recent release titled Piel de Aceituna. She records for the Putumayo record label. Here she is singing India song.
Canto sin saber lo que digo, tal vez te hablaré de ella que nunca conocí.
And Maria Montalvo joins us now on the phone from her home in Paris. And it's very good of you to be with us today.
Hi.
This was your first American tour. I wonder, what kind of reaction did you get?
It was a wonderful tour. Thanks to Putumayo World Music, my you know, they brought me there. And we were three singers, very surprised by the reception of the American audience, because we thought that we will have a lot of Latin American people, in fact. And the average, in fact, it was 80% American audience and 20% Latin American people.
Hmm.
And the American audience was very surprised by our music. They are not used to listen that kind of music, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In the United States, in Europe, and even in Latin America, is commercial, if you can say.
Yes.
Commercial music that is the most listened, you know. And to hear three singers different, who don't make music only for dance, it was wonderful. It was a wonderful way to know American people.
You visited many different cities in America, Albuquerque, New York City. First of all, what did you learn about America while you were here?
A lot of things. People are very good energy. It's big difference between New York. For me, New York is apart. It's not the United States, you know. You can say that New York is special because it's so cosmopolitan, you know. There are so many different civilizations in there.
Mm-hmm.
That the audience in New York was different than Albuquerque, for instance, because in Albuquerque there are only American people, almost, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. We knew deep America with good things, bad things. You don't eat very well, for instance. So I can say it. You don't eat very well. But people are very open-minded. I was very astonished for this also, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But after the election, Bush election, it was very special. We were exactly in New Mexico when the 2 or 3rd of November. And it was special, a special moment.
I wonder, when artists begin to get international recognition, does it help other musicians back home?
It help other musicians for?
The people who are still back in Chile or in Paris?
No, I don't live in Chile at all. Huh? I live in Paris, but it's very important. That's true that you say that in Chile. Now I have a lot of interviews that I didn't have 6 months ago, because I go to the United States, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but it's important for Latin American people to know another music, a different music, you know.
Well, we wish you the best of luck with your new record.
Oh, thank you very much.
Maria Montalvo joined us on the line from her home in Paris. Her latest album is Piel de Aceituna. And Chris Nixon, I meant to ask you, she comes from a tradition called New Song. It's an important thread in world
music. Nueva Canción, yes. It's a tradition, really, that is pan-Latin, evolving at the 60s and the 70s, with a whole new movement of song. It's not really limited to any one country. It didn't hit Brazil so much, but a lot of the other nations embraced it. And it was often quite political. It was this whole new spirit, really, from the 60s and the 70s that just took the part of the continent, at least, by storm and lives on. And she's one of the best contemporary practitioners of it.
Let's get another caller on the line. And Paul is with us.
Hi, Beach, it's my turn.
Hi.
Hello?
Yes, it is your turn, Paul. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a musician, and I had a question and a comment about the term world music. I had often wondered if it was largely a marketing term, mainly to get people interested in music that they might otherwise not listen to. And I ask this because I think of, like, when I travel abroad, if somebody came up to me in a pub in Ireland and said, hey, can you play me some of that American music, I would scratch my head asking, well, do you want rock and roll, country, zydeco, jazz, or bluegrass, or something like that? Because it seems to me that the term doesn't do justice to all the incredible music from all these different countries that are currently classified as world music. It almost seems like maybe it should be called the rest of the world music. And I'll take my response off the air.
And good luck with your daughter there.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
My son.
Aha, okay. Sorry about that.
Bye-bye.
Go ahead, Chris.
Well, it is a marketing term. And it's one that's controversial. There's a lot of pros and cons to it. And a lot of people within the industry hate it. At the same time, it's the best we've got right now because, yes, it encompasses so many things. But at least if you're using the term world music, you get space in the big chain record stores that you wouldn't if you had, to pick up on his Irish music, you'd be hard-pressed to find a section, music from Eastern County Clare, for example. It gets all lumped together, and no, it's not perfect by any means, but in these days when the big chains would happily get rid of a lot of things to have a lot of the marginal things to have more profitable items like DVDs and video games on the shelves, I think we're better off taking what we've got and maximizing the use of it.
There is so much of it. It comes from so many different places. Your book attempts to be a survey, amongst other things. But where do you go to find new world music?
I'm perhaps in a slightly different category because I get to hear about it in the way that most people wouldn't. But online is a good start. There are a lot of radio stations online from other parts of the world. There are a lot of magazines out there that give people an entryway into this. And those are probably the best places to start hunting around online, looking in magazines, and just going to a record store and thinking, okay, what kind of music am I interested in? Start off by buying a compilation, and then pick tracks you like and investigate albums by those artists.
Mm-hmm.
You go in, you work in baby steps, I suppose.
All right. Let's get another listener on the line, and this is Jean Genoux, who's calling from Orange Park in Florida.
Hi. Just had a comment about how this music might be expanding its popularity, and that's through my son. He heard as the soundtrack on a video game some ethnic rhythmic music, and he traced it down through the credits on the video game and then went on to Amazon and ended up buying this disc that was kind of African ethnic drum rhythms. Then when I was taking a dance class, he spent time in the bookstore checking out all the Putumayo titles and ended up with three or four of those. And so his interest has not been filtered by what we would normally categorize our music preferences, whether it's rock or country, what have you, but just because he's liked the rhythms. And so perhaps the reason that world music is getting more attention is that some younger audiences are grabbing hold of it and expanding that way.
Is it grabbing you as well as your son?
Well, right, yeah, because when as I try to kind of keep up with him and what he's interested in, we both are very much interested in it. So, and of course, I'm buying the music. So.
I see. So I hope you enjoy it. Thanks,
yeah, I appreciate the program.
Thanks very much for the call.
Thanks.
Earlier we mentioned the group, the Afro-Celt Sound System. Simon Emerson is the Grammy-nominated producer with that world music group. It fuses Irish and Western African music with electronic programming. This is Riding the Skies from Afro-Celt Sound System's latest album, Pod. And Simon Emerson joins us now from his home in West Dorset in England, and it's nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
It's very nice to be here.
How did you get to start incorporating world music with electronica?
Okay, it started for me back in the early 90s when I was in West Africa working with Babamal and his musicians and his tribe, and I was trying to find a link between what they were doing, which was very tribal and very roots-based, and what I was doing, which was based in the whole post kind of acid house scene in the UK. Clubs were opening up to different types of music. What was predominantly house grooves and beats were mixing up with a lot of Brazilian fusion and a lot of African stuff. I'm sure you've been talking about this a lot on the program already.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt there was an interface there between my own roots, which, if you like, was kind of London electronica, and the ancient music of West Africa. A lot of people thought I was mad, but when Babamal came over to London and started going to clubs with me and meeting DJs, he agreed, and he said that there are a lot of similarities, there are a lot of cultural similarities and a lot of musical similarities. So basically, it was a way of bringing together a very ancient form of music with modern technology.
Mm-hmm. You're not the only one doing this.
Not now, no. But at the time, there was a small group of musicians who were all going to one particular club in London. It was a bit like the sort of, I kind of visualise the Merseybeat in 1962 or something.
Yeah, down in the Cavern Club, yeah.
Yeah, and those musicians went on to form bands like Transglobal, Underground and Fundamental, and they all became the kind of pioneers of the what's now called Global Fusion or Global Electronica. And for better or worse, it's become a well-established genre.
And where do you think it's become well-established? Do you think it has a future, or is this just a, you know, something that will pass, do you think?
Well, I mean, put it this way, when I started the Afro-Celt Sound System, our estimated album sales were about 30,000. That's what we were hoping and praying for. And, you know, we've gone on to sell over 1 million records now. And the success of the band has, I think, shown that as a musical genre, it's very, very popular. And you hear our music on, you know, one of the previous callers in was talking about computer games. I mean, we've just done some music for a film about the Rwandan Civil War, and we found that the people we were dealing with in the film industry were very familiar, not with just us, our band, but with, you know, all these groups that have kind of come out of the scene. So, yeah, I mean, it is established, yeah.
Is that...
We've come out of the margins.
It's transgenerational as well, isn't it?
Say that again?
It's transgenerational as well, isn't it, Simon?
Absolutely, completely. We at the end of our tour this year, we, to our absolute delight, sold out the Royal Festival Hall, which is the most kind of prestigious art house gig in the UK. And, you know, there were six-year-olds there, and they were there, you know, they were there with their grannies. You know, it's completely transgenerational. It's music that brings people together. And it's about celebration. It's about celebration of diversity. And it's you know, I'm very proud to be part of it, because as a musician and record producer, I do think it's one of the most fertile areas to be working in terms of boundary crossings, in terms of creating new ideas in terms of exploring, you know, my own roots. So, yeah, it's all good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Simon Emerson, thanks very much for being with us.
That's a pleasure.
And good luck with the Afro-Celt sound system.
Thank you very much.
Simon Emerson joined us from his home in West Dorset in England. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And I wanted to play another of the cuts that Chris picked out for us. This is, tell us a little bit about El Gran Silencio.
Well, this is, in some ways, it's the Latin equivalent, perhaps, of what Simon's doing with Afro-Celts. In as much as it's, this track is traditionally rooted a cumbia, but presented in a very modern way to appeal to a much younger generation. Although it's interesting that In Latin music, and particularly Mexican music, you do find a great deal of respect, actually, for the old forms. You'll find kids down in L.A. who are into hip-hop who also play very traditional-sounding music in their cars. The two things work next to each other. But this brings together two different types of generations. The cumbia updated. This is called Cumbia Muffin.
Mm-hmm. That from El Gran Silencio. Let's see if we get another caller on the line before we have to go. Jesse joins us from Fairfield, California.
Good afternoon.
Go ahead, Jesse.
Yeah, I'm from England originally, and my father puts on a Africa Oya UK tour. He's been doing it for about 10 years. And we have all kinds of bands from 14 different countries, from Benin, South Africa, Nigeria.
A lot of these festivals, Chris Nixon?
Yeah, there are. Europe is just absolutely crammed with festivals. You see it less over here, and I mean, particularly since 9/11, when the whole situation with getting visas for foreign artists has changed. And this was actually there was a story about this on NPR yesterday about the difficulty of foreign artists getting visas. But it does make it a lot harder for musicians to tour over here. So it has cut down the festival possibilities within this country.
Jesse, thanks very much. I'm afraid to cut you off, but we have to go. We're running into a break. But we appreciate the phone call.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
Okay. And Chris Nixon, thank you for joining us today as well.
It's been my pleasure.
Chris Nixon is the author of the NPR Curious Listener's Guide to World Music. He's a music critic and a frequent contributor to National Public Radio. When we come back from a short break, from a gypsy caravan to world music acclaim, the life of Django Reinhardt, I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.